Finance and Business with Stephen Mayne, who's the business editor of The Australian. It's 14 minutes past nine here on 702 ABC Sydney.
Hell, beauty, we're underway.
What's it worth chucking a sickie for, Dave?
Usually the best one for a game of golf. You know, a bad day on the golf course, so I think it's a good day in the office.
I don't know about that.
To help a neighbour find a lost pet.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Please do join me, Andrew Daddo.
Talking about sickies, In my family I've had an institution. I always had one day off for term, and I taught my children do the same.
Weekday evenings from 7.
I think it empowers the working class.
On 702 ABC Sydney.
On Sunday night, ASIC shocked the stock markets in Australia by banning short trades. It was part of a world wave against these trades. The market has risen since, and largely that's due to the US intervention. But is it lurching like a drunken sailor? Up today, down tomorrow, roundabout. How rattled should investors be? Andrew Mayne is the business editor of The Australian. He joins me to talk about it. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Deb. Do you remember when you were a kid and you went on a roller coaster ride and you sat at the end and you thought you'd had a good time, but your sense of orientation was such as all you could do to climb out onto the platform beside the roller coaster and sort of grope for some fairy floss? That's where we are at the moment. It's just remarkable. Overnight, you know, we had the Dow was off 3.27%. That's not particularly disastrous because I think it made up about 8% in the last 2 days of last week. The UK market was off 1.4%. That they had 8% in one day up, which was the biggest rise anyone could ever remember.
You know what I'm going to get you to do before you say one more word? Is cross to that other microphone. Richard Glover had this problem yesterday. There's a buzzing in that microphone.
Oh, I thought it was just my wit and wisdom.
Yeah, no, no, it's not your wit and wisdom. If you go across to that one, we'll try and get the other microphone fixed before the quickly buzz across there. It's just terribly, I could hear it really badly in my earphones. So I'm sure it's coming out of people's wirelesses all over Sydney.
Oh, yeah.
We don't want them, your words of wisdom being clouded, let alone your wit.
Well, I don't know. They might start thinking that someone's put one of those chips in their brain.
Now,
of course they have.
Well, let's talk about this whole thing about the roller coaster ride that you allude to, because do you think that people who are inexperienced in the market should give it a very wide berth for a while?
100%. I mean, it's interesting to notice that some of the bank stocks in Australia, they're the ones that are usually held out to be one of the most reliable investments. And I haven't looked in the last few days, but I suspect that if you buy a bank stock at the moment and they assume that they carry on paying dividends at the rate they've been paying, which of course is possibly a fairly heroic assumption, if you do that, then they're paying in excess of 10% dividends, which is great. That's better than money in the bank, so to speak. And it's fully franked, which means that you don't have to pay tax on it. So that's actually a belting yield. I'm telling you this from the dizzy perspective of not having actually checked, but the issue there is that they represented that value when they were at higher prices, so they're even better value now. The hard part is just trying to work out if there's some more negatives for the Australian market. With Lehman Brothers, for instance, it turned out that there was some of the Australian banks had exposures to Lehman Brothers. Now we learn this morning, incidentally, your producer Yuske is feeling just a whisker of national pride, I think, because he's discovered that not only has Nomura bought a large chunk of Lehman's, it's bought Lehman Brothers operations in Asia Pacific and Australia. I think that'll calm the market a bit, but also Mitsubishi, it's called Mitsubishi UFJ is the correct title, bought one-fifth of Morgan Stanley in New York, which is also, by the way, 10% owned by the CIC, which is a Chinese investment group. Now, I've got right off the point, haven't I? You were asking, really, is there a risk?
Well, yes, I think that what I'm driving at is people sort of say, and in a way you can see it with what's happening with Nomura Securities and Mitsubishi UFJ. They've come in when the market has tanked, mm-hmm. and they've bottom fished and they're picking up good assets.
Yeah.
They've obviously got a lot of experience at doing this kind of thing. Can ordinary investors look at the same set of circumstances, see what appear to be great bargains to be bought and wade into the market? Or is that unsafe and they just should stay well away because there's still a lot of turbulence there?
Look, if they're feeling brave, they should put a small percentage of their money into some really solid stocks, because what you could argue is that in 6 months' time or a year's time, they'll look back and go, wow, those stocks were cheap. It's just that there's a number of extremely hackneyed phrases, but I'll try one of them on you, which is nothing's cheap when it's going down, and that's the heart of the matter. I mean, for instance, today I would assume the Australian market's going to go south, not to any dramatic degree. One of the interesting things
is that because it went up so much.
No, it's because the US and the UK markets are off. Incidentally, the US market went off. It's classic day two stuff. On day one, you hear that there's going to be a big rescue. And so the US market goes zooming up. And everyone thinks, right, that's it, we're all going to be rescued. And then day two, America's the land of the free. There's a fair bit of lively debate goes on. And not surprisingly, everyone's come rushing out the woodwork to say either it's not enough or it's not enough in the right place. Or one of the arguments they certainly have in the States and they're beginning to have elsewhere is the notion of moral hazard, which is that you shouldn't keep bailing people out when they've stuffed up. However, the argument against that, and I was talking to a banker yesterday, is sometimes you get yourself to a situation where the alternative is just infinitely worse, and so you just have to bail them out. I mean, one of my pet beefs, to be honest, having followed the collapse of HIH insurance, is I suspect that AIG, that big American international group, that's going to turn out to be an absolute shocker. You can, if I can just go digress for a moment, one of the things that was wrong with HIH, and incidentally $5.2 billion sounded like an awful lot in Australia, but that's what HIH took with it. Then you look at AIG, they are getting, I think it's $75 billion US to keep them going. Now, you tick various boxes. One of them is, Have they fudged their reporting numbers by borrowing, by doing some dodgy transactions involving something called financial reinsurance, which is what HIH did, and you look at AIG and you find that's exactly what they did. AIG had to pay a fine in 2005 of approximately $1 billion US for fudging its numbers, and it bought a dodgy reinsurance policy from a company called General Re, which is owned by Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, which is something that I find fairly alarming. It's one of those sort of say it ain't so Superman situations where everyone wants to believe in Warren Buffett and then they do that sort of thing. But anyway, there was that. The other box you have to tick is in terms of parallels between HIH insurance and AIG is the notion of a dominating central character who'd been in the industry forever, and Ray Williams was the Australian one, HIH, and Hank Greenberg, who's the guy who ran AIG, had been around for considerably longer than anybody else in the industry, and you become a doyen, a legend, all that sort of stuff, but the fact is you get away with doing things that nobody else would have the nerve to do. So this is a long-winded way of saying that I think that AIG may turn out to be the exploding cigar in the box that's being sorted in the States at the moment, because meaning that they got a loan of $75 billion US, and what's going to happen is the US government's going to take them over. But that doesn't eliminate the fact that maybe the whole long comet-like tail of nasty risks that they haven't even considered yet. So that's my beef. But just coming back to the share markets, and sorry, there's so many things to talk about, I could bore you rigid. But just coming back to the share markets, there's very, very much the case that They're zooming up and down almost on a daily basis. Day two, as I say, of the rescue package in the States. Meantime, we haven't talked about the spectacular, relative schmozzle, I'll be kind, the schmozzle that happened in Australia yesterday with the banning of short selling, the full ban of short selling. What had happened was on Friday...
Well, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because that was brought in because everyone was terribly nervous about what had happened last week.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the way the world spins, Australia is the first significant stock market to open on a Monday morning. Now, I apologise to our New Zealand visitors here, but that's New Zealand's much a fair bit smaller than Australia, and it's the first one to open. And I think the nightmare scenario was all these hedge funds descending and attacking the market. Interesting point, by the way, is I noticed that the oil price went zooming up overnight in the US, and you can't help wondering whether there's this pack of sort of financial Visigoths who are sort of walking around saying, right, what can we buy into next? If we can't make money by selling shares we don't own in Australia, that's short selling, in the hope of buying them back more cheaply, which is why they do it. If we can't do that, maybe we can all just hop into the oil market. And of course, you can draw the parallel that if there is to be a rescue of the US toxic debts by the US taxpayer, then that's going to ward off the notion, of a recession, in which case oil use may go up. You can just imagine people sitting over there, sort of over their cups of coffee yesterday morning in the US, the hedge fund managers saying, what can we do next? And there's a slightly lemming approach, as you can see. They've all gone whizzing off into the oil market. Well, there's nowhere.
It is a sort of fascinating thing, really. You know, because if they're all so smart, they all pay each other millions of dollars and millions of dollars in bonuses. And
or pay themselves.
They pay themselves or decide that they're all worth all this dough. But they behave like sheep. If they're so bright, how come they're so driven by rumour? How come they're so driven by ideas which aren't common sense?
Well, I struggle with this because I keep thinking of this fellow, Philip Falcone. He's a hedge fund manager in the States. He lives in he's a former professional hockey player, and he makes a great deal of money out of Australia by being short banking stocks, long and owning mining stocks. He just sold out of, I think it was Murchison Metals yesterday for about $250 million. He lives in his apartment. He has a Vietnamese pig called Pickles.
And the things you know.
Oh, look at the Vesuvius of trivia. And anyway, he's obviously pretty smart, but I think he's a oncer. He's a one-off. But I think another glib line I'll have to give you is the trend is your friend, and essentially, you will make less losses if you gallop along with the others for a while. I mean, it's just a sort of safety in numbers thing. I can't believe that the genuine underlying oil price needed to go up by almost $20 US, maybe more overnight. It of course it didn't need to. It's not like global demand's doing that. Was there a hurricane? Was there an explosion in Nigeria? Was there a war in Georgia? No. It was a whole bunch of characters in expensive suits again diving in there saying let's hide in the oil market until all this blows over.
And the gold market too. The gold price has done quite well.
That's the tendency that it had a huge lift on the worst day last week, which was Wednesday, went zooming up. I got a call from somebody in Perth who was saying he'd gone off to the Perth Mint to buy some silver, and silver's about one tenth the price of gold. They'd run out of silver. Now, Western Australia is not actually a big producer of silver. It also transpired that there was a waiting list, except in huge bars. Apparently, you could buy a 100-ounce bar of silver and a 100-ounce bar of gold and stick it in your pocket and take it home. I should tell you, by the way, this is more a breathtaking trivia. Gold is quite a lot heavier than lead, and I've been in a gold mine where they pour the gold bar and let it cool, and then they say, right, would you like to lift it up? And I say, all right. And they say, but on one condition, you've got to stretch your arm out to lift it up. So you stretch your arm right out, you lift it up, and you suddenly realise this stuff, gold is, even in its raw form with quite a lot of impurities, is about twice as heavy as lead. And it's just quite startling to realise what the ancients must have made of this stuff.
So pocketing a 100-ounce bar and walking out
would have ruined the cut of your clothes, yes.
It would. Now, of course, some big companies have survived last week. Macquarie Bank is probably the most notable. It seemed that it was really cruising for a bruising there for a couple of days and scraped...
Well, there's been quite a furore about furore, I think is the correct term, sorry, about Macquarie Bank. And I just wanted to say that what happened was one of my colleagues, Adele Ferguson, wrote an article last week using a piece of research that was not brand new, saying that because of the increased price of money, the increased short-term cost of money, Macquarie was going to have, I've forgotten what the exact phrase was, but was going to find it hard to replace its short-term loans at a good price. And this turned into the biggest scandal. It was all about shouting fire in a crowded theatre. And she got roundly maligned all over the joint. Indeed, my cohort Stephen Mayne was probably the principal maligner there. And he and I have had a jest about it yesterday. But the long and the short of it is that the price of Macquarie Bank shares, Macquarie Group shares, did go down fairly significantly. However, there was our reporters know very well that you don't run around shouting fire in a crowded theatre. And so the issue really comes down to the question of whether what she wrote was true. And I believe emphatically that it was. And so that blows the whole thing, the whole argument completely askew. I think there's going to be more ructions, so I'd better not bang on too much about it. But I think that, you know, the pursuit of truth is a fairly noble activity, and it tends to get confused sometimes.
Though it is interesting that that the source of the story said that there was a context issue, and I took great interest in what Mr. Rudd had said to Mr. Turnbull. It was akin to that "don't shout fire in a crowded theatre."
Yeah,
that in this environment where panic and rumour is driving fear and greed and all of those other things that we talk about here every week, newspapers and other media have these really quite responsible roles. You've got to be careful.
Hugely, but the irony of that was that there was a note put out by Macquarie Bank to the stock exchange making various comments about Adele's article, and they were quoting her out of context as well. So the whole thing just becomes a giant snowball.
Thanks very much for coming in, Andrew.
Thank you.
Andrew Mayne is the business editor of The Australian.